Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy C. I'm from New York and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, June 17th, 2026. Today we're reading from the Big Book. We are in Chapter 4. We are on the Agnostics. We're on page 45. We're starting at the bottom, third paragraph, which starts with, we know how he feels. Going into page 46, the eighth sentence, we're stopping at the fifth line, cable calamity with deep skepticism. Today's readers, today we have the 12 steps, Sarah G., the 12 traditions, Maria H., reader of the text is Sally A., page 164, Maura Z., backup today is Tina S., our newcomer greeter is Sima M., and our second hour host is Eileen M., and thank you all for your service. The reference number for yesterday, Tuesday, June 16th, our 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,553. That is 23553. And our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting was 23,554. That's 23554. Our OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive eating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Sarah G. to read the 12 steps. Come on in, Sarah.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Good morning. This is Sarah G. from New York. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you. That was Sarah G., and I'm now going to ask Maria H. to please read the 12 traditions. Come on in, please, Maria.
Thanks, Kathy. This is Maria H. in Georgia, recovered compulsive overeater, the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group that never endorsed, financed, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Less problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions of reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Maria. Our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop on sharing what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study in the Big Book. We are on chapter 4, We Agnostics. We are on page 45, third paragraph, We Know How He Feels. We are reading 8 sentences and ending on the 5th line, inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. I'm now going to ask Sally A. Please begin reading.
Thank you so much, Kathy, for your service to all of us. Good morning, everyone. It's Sally A. in New York, a recovered compulsive overeater. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. We looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, an inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. So we're looking at this page, page 45, we have this fabulous paragraph, Lack of Power, 2 paragraphs up, which explains that, again, step 1, that we are without the power to be healed of this horrible mental anguish and allergy of our body without a higher power. And so it's sort of, they're setting us up. Then they go down the page, we are going to talk about God. And that's in the middle of the next paragraph. And so when we read these words this morning of the beginning of our paragraph, we know how he feels, what are they talking about? 1, 2, 3 sentences up, when we mention God, we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. That's what we're talking about. And we all know how this feels. I just want to bring to your attention on page 27, the bottom of the page, where Roland Hazard is relieved that this doctor, Carl Hsiong, he says at the bottom of page 27, while his religious convictions were very good in his case, they did not spell the necessary vital spiritual experience. So we're not talking about a religion or your religion. We're talking about a spiritual solution, and that's something very different. I know when I came to this program, every time they got to this chapter, I just wanted to skip it. I would actually not want to go to a meeting face-to-face if I knew that that's what the chapter was that they were in. I'd think, oh, I don't need that chapter. But the truth was that I very much was agnostic in my thinking. My thinking as a Christian, and that's what I was. My thinking was, I get up, I pray, I spend some time with God, and then I say, see ya, in my heart, because I was not a spiritual person. I thought I was a spiritual person, but I wasn't a spiritual person. And when I read these words, violently anti-religious, honest, we have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. These are very strong words, violently anti-religious. There are religions that I'm very violently anti, for sure. But we're talking about something very different here, and it is connecting to some part of what's in your soul. And that's where they're leading us to, this part that was in us, that was built into us, because this book is letting us know that it's, I cannot get well on my own. Something outside of me will have to do it for me. And that is what this paragraph is telling us. Here we are stepping a little bit closer to the subject. Thank you. We're stepping a little bit closer to why we're blocked and what we've been eating over and what will help us to get well. And it's not a religion. It's a spiritual component within us. Thank you so much. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you so much, Sally, for getting us started. I'm now going to take some names, and please press star one to unmute. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you shared on Monday or Tuesday of either meeting, we ask that you hold back. Please press star one. I'm ready to take our first lineup. Your first name, the first initial of your last name, and where you're calling from, please.
Karen K. in Michigan.
I have Karen K. in Michigan.
Tennessee.
Somebody from Tennessee.
Sophie S.
Thank you.
Yep.
Sarah G. from New York.
Thank you, Sarah.
Ken W. H.
Thank you, Ken.
Sima M.
Thank you, Sima.
Ms. S. from Oregon.
Anyone else want to share in the first lineup?
Did you get Liz S., please?
I have Liz S., yes. I have Karen K., Sophie S., Sarah G., Ken W.H., Sema, Liz, and Leia. Anyone else? Because we'll take that as our first lineup. Just to remind you, we are on page 45. We are reading 8 sentences from the third paragraph, please.
Peggy W., I'll share.
Okay, that's a great lineup. Thank you. Okay, so Karen K. from Michigan, please start us off, followed by Sophie and then Sarah. Come on in, Karen.
Hey, good morning. It's actually Erin K., E-R-I-N-K, in Michigan.
I'm so sorry.
Thanks. No worries. It happens 90% of the time. this is Erin K., recovered compulsive overeater. You know, this paragraph always makes me reflect on my on the difference between religion and spirituality, but also on my own history and experience. And I'm always just, every time I think about it, I'm taken aback about, you know, the journey, essentially. And, you know, both my parents were alcoholics. And so the religion of my home was basically the bottle. And when I was about 12, I started going to a church with a friend, a neighbor. And even after that friend moved away, I kept going. And that group became my family. And those people really, the people that I knew took care of me. You know, they would pick me up and drop me off. And I went on with them and I was very involved. And I did believe, you know, I had a faith as a kid. I prayed. And then I got to college and I became, you know, on this path to medical school and started worshiping science and my own intellect. And I ended up meeting and marrying a man of a different religion and, you know, just kind of slid into this agnosticism and this intellectualism and worshiping my brain and all the things, you know, I thought my brain was going to do for me in life. And I started to have what I realized was contempt for my former self, my young self, that, you know, things were hard and I needed that crutch, but that's just a crutch. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, and so when I came to OA, you know, because my brain could not fix this compulsive eating problem. And when I came to OA and realized, you know, this was going to challenge me to look at faith and spirituality, I realized I had to let go of that contempt of my former self and open myself up again to some kind of belief and to stop worshiping my own intellect, even to stop needing to define and understand God, but just have the experience, you know, take the actions that would bring me back into that dependent and loving relationship that sustains me. And, you know, one day I was looking in the mirror and I had this like dawning realization that I don't even know why. I was like looking at my own eyes in the mirror. And I realized in that moment that even though I had been asleep to it for many, many years, God was still there. You know, God doesn't move. God was there all along. And I was protected by so much that I could have been exposed to because I did have a faith when I was a kid. And I see it as such a gift now. So anyway, but that all passed.
Thank you so much. That was Erin K. from Michigan. Next up, we have Sophie, followed by Sarah, and then Ken W.H. Sophie, please come in and share with us.
Good morning. Thank you. Hi, everybody. Everybody who's doing service this morning, so grateful for you all. You know, reading this book is always one of those things that it baffles me that it was written, you know, many years ago at this point, and it's something that someone like me can still identify with. And I feel that way about the whole book, but particularly about this chapter, because when I read this, these eight sentences, I mean, this is describing to a T how I felt when I arrived in these rooms. And it's just, I mean, that's a miracle in and of itself. But, you know, when I first arrived in the program, I knew that I was slowly killing myself with food, and that I couldn't stop. I knew that I wanted to live a different way, and I thought that I was willing to go to any lengths to get it. You know, when I got a sponsor and she asked me that question, I thought that I was, until the idea of, you know, God came up. I thought that, you know, that was something that all of you had to do, right? Like, you all had gotten a little further along than I was and were worse off than me. And so you needed that God thing. But, you know, me and my self-will and, you know, my intellect were going to be more than sufficient. And, you know, I wasn't even really going to stick around in the program. Once I got a handle on the food, I would go on my merry way. And that would be that. Thank you very much. And I think about that now, and man, was there a lot of I in there, you know, there was no room for God. And I just, like when I really peel back that onion and reflect on that place where I was at, I was just afraid. Because I, you know, somewhere in this book, it says something along the lines of like, who wants to admit complete defeat? Practically no one. And I wasn't ready to admit that defeat. And I certainly wasn't ready to admit that my way wasn't good enough. Because exactly like this is saying that I needed that dependent, like I needed to depend on something else. That meant that I failed and that I was weak, or that's what I thought at least. And I mean, gosh, that was probably the thing that I was my biggest fear is being perceived as weak or incompetent in some capacity. And yeah, I wasn't able to string together time and eventually I went back out. And all I can say is that when I came back in, I knew that something had to change and I had to be willing. And I had to set aside my ego and admit that I didn't know the answer. And that was really scary for me. I mean, and even scarier was admitting that to another person and saying, you know, I want what you have. I want. Amazing. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. I hope you all have a great day. And thanks again for letting me share. Hope everybody has a great afternoon day.
Thank you. That was Sophie S. from Tennessee. Next up, we have Sarah, followed by Ken, and then Sima. Sarah, please come in and share with us.
Hi. Good morning. This is Sarah G. Thank you again, Kathy, for your service. And thank you, everyone, who makes this meeting possible. So grateful for another day, because this is all I have. God, my precious God, He, you know, the relationship constantly evolves. Like how grateful I am that it's not the same relationship that it was when I was a child, and I did have a certain connection to God that I do come from a specific faith, and it's not that I necessarily learned it. I did learn certain things in my home. I did learn certain things in school, and I don't know. It definitely is something spiritual. I don't know how to explain it, but I had my own relationship to God. I wasn't rote. And even now this morning, just constantly feeling God and what is the next right thing to do. You know, my schedule was a little different this morning because I was at a wedding last night, and it was hard to get out of bed, you know, and I did it. And then I kept on looking at my watch because I knew I needed to come on to read the 12 steps. And it's like, oh, time is going so slowly. And then I realized that my watch had stopped. And I was like, oh, so what is the real time? And maybe I missed my opportunity to come on and read the 12 steps. And I got a drop nervous. And then I was like, no, what would God have me be? And when I looked at another clock, I saw that I still had 6 minutes. And I came on. And it wasn't the way I wanted things because I want to come on 10 minutes before. It's okay. You know, what does God want? And it's not like I want to do something to make life inconvenient for other people. And within this program, you know, because I can isolate and when I'm in the program, I'm that's also constantly evolving where I am reaching out to people and so that I can stay connected to God because that's what my life is about. Only my connection to God. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sarah G. from New York. Next up, we have Ken, followed by Sima, and then Liz S. Come on in, Ken.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Ken WH, recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina. When I got into OA and spent a lot of years in and out and doing all kinds of weird things, far from recovering, I was in touch with God of my understanding, and I was involved in all the theological debates and everything else, and while I was going through all of that and being very involved in the religion of my choice, I was still eating like a crazy person. And what I've come to understand is that it isn't so much that I find or go looking for even a particular God or a particular way of speaking of that. I have my own way, and that's okay, of relating to the God of my understanding. The problem was, is through all those years, I was not addressing the fact that I have had no power over the way I ate, no power over certain foods once they're in my body, no power over my crazy thoughts about food, and I was not applying that reality, that lack of power, that awareness, that on my knees I can't do this kind of thing. I was not accessing the God of my understanding to solve that problem. Because the book says, I'm looking for a power, or I need a power greater than myself that will solve my problem. My problem, and I would add, with food. I just wasn't making the connection. The power was there all the time. I was the one standing in the way of accessing that power that I believe is inside of me, and it's been there all along, but I was just standing in the way of it. I needed to see myself as a powerless compulsive eater. And without this power, without accessing that power, I am still going to be powerless. if I let it go, I'm in trouble. But I've come to know that that's my source. That's where I go. And I'm grateful that that has worked. And I pray that it will continue to do so. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you so much. That was Ken W.H. from North Carolina. I just wanted to let everyone know where we're at. We are on page 45, the third paragraph. Starts with, we know how he feels, through eight sentences, ending with inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. We're reading eight sentences this morning. Next up, we have Sima M, followed by Liz, and then Leah. Come on in, Sima. Sima, please press star one to unmute.
Good morning. This is Sima M, grateful compulsive overeater, living in recovery. When I first came in the program 51 years ago in Manhattan, after the first couple of meetings, I met a man who was speaking on the ninth step in the big book, or actually it might have been the 12-step AA book. But he talked about the power, not a religious power, and needing to access that power. And he started big book workshops, and I would go. But I was still into food. I asked him what would happen with the food, and he said, the program will override the problem. Anyway, I was very much involved with the groups there for 2 years. And then I moved to Queens after I got married, and the program wasn't there anymore, that program. People weren't talking about higher powers. They were reading the words, but they didn't really talk about it. Nobody was teaching it. So I floundered around for another 10 years with OA, and then eventually I left because I wasn't having any success. I could be on a diet for about 18 months, and then I would lose it and go back into the food, and I didn't understand why. Come 13 years ago, I came back to OA and found a vision, and I felt like I was born again, because we were really talking about the program and a higher power. And since then, I've learned, and even though I was brought up with a religion, I didn't understand a connection with God. And in fact, through my looking into OA, I started going back and affiliating with religious institutions, and I learned a lot about God, but I still didn't get the higher power connection with the compulsive overeating until I came back to a vision for you, came back and found a vision for you, and have been learning ever since and living in recovery and maintaining abstinence for 13 years. So thank you to a vision for you. For I didn't even know what an agnostic was. I didn't have a problem with God, but I didn't know how to connect with God. And thanks to this program, I am no longer an agnostic. I am a Gnostic, I think, is the word. Someone that knows there's a God and how to connect. I will pass.
Tim, can you let us know where you're calling in from? Okay, that was Sima M. And now we have Liz S, followed by Leigh, and then Peggy. Liz, please come in and share with us.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you for your service. May I be heard?
Yes, we hear you well, Liz. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, everyone, and thank you for everyone being here. Religion and spirituality, interesting. And heartfelt. I was brought up a Methodist of the kind that there was no dancing, drinking, or smoking allowed. And I early on realized that I loved to sing and I loved to dance. And that fills my soul. Except that I didn't know that's what it was doing. I thought that happiness equaled excitement and ego fulfillment. And I got a lot of good feedback about my dancing and singing. But the God of Methodism didn't fit my core, my spirit, and it didn't fit my rigorous biochemistry background that I acquired and grew up with. Science, I later on found out that science says that through evolution, it's evolutionarily excellent, helpful to have a God inherent in me. I knew that it was necessary to overcome fear, and it was a kind of a power, but I couldn't relate it to food. I had, you know, and then the big book said that I could define a God, and that felt dishonest to me. I felt like God was supposed to be an absolute out there. But through OA, I have learned to define a God, and I know I have a spirit at my core and in my heart. And now I know that it's okay to nurture my spirit with a concept of a higher power, and that I need that, and Visions provides that. I did not get the connection until I came here. And I am so very grateful for this meeting and for everyone who helps. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much. That's Liz S. from Oregon. Next up, we have Leah S., followed by Peggy. And after Peggy, we can take another lineup. Leah, please come in and share with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. My name is Leah S. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and so grateful this morning. So we read, and I'm going to focus on the fourth line of that paragraph that we read, starting with, "We know how he feels." And over there it says, towards the end of that line, "Someone had tried to impress upon me." Someone had tried to convince me all good, all beauty, all everything is just that higher power. And the truth of the matter is, it's not an equation. I got to come to my own conclusion. I came into these meetings because I had a weight problem. I had more problems, but I didn't admit that I had all problems. I had a weight problem that everyone was seeing and I was feeling. I was looking for the next bench where I can sit down. This is not life. And what happened? How does this come into the equation of that higher power? The higher power had to be something so infinite that there's no other name for it. For me, and it's God. It's not another name. Nobody gets that name. And it's not tit for tat either. The skepticism, it's not tit for tat. You do this for me, God, I'm going to do this for you. Instead, it is, what is the fact over here? I know it came from you, dear God, because nobody could have. I did this and this and this. It didn't turn out this and this. So I know it came from you, God. It's a whole new concept. It's my concept. What did I do when things didn't go my way? You know, on page 151, they're talking about these four horsemen. I became terrified. I became bewildered. I became frustrated. I became despaired. I became all kinds of different adjectives. But, and then in the next paragraph on page 51, the last one, they say, I feel better. I work better. And I'm doing things a little bit better. And I see as I keep on going towards the positive side of my food and of my situations, the more positive it gets and the more better I feel. And I equate that with my higher power, whom I choose to call God. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much. That was Leah S. from New York. Next up, we have Peggy. And after Peggy, I can take another lineup. Just a reminder, we are on page 45, the third paragraph. We know how he feels. We are reading eight sentences ending with inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. Peggy, please come in and share with us and tell us where you're calling in from. Peggy, please press star one to unmute yourself.
Hi, I'm here. Hi, it's Peg from Wisconsin. Yeah, I like this chapter here. I like these last few lines in Wowza is all I got. The higher power for me is something I have to embrace every morning. And I don't know, a friend of mine and I were talking the other day, and she's like, I asked her how it was coming along with her higher power, and she says, you know, I just don't want to be made a fool of. And I said, you know, Jen, I feel the same way, but I don't feel like that today. I don't feel like I'm going to be made a fool of. I feel like this is a real thing. Like, I have to tell you, the other day I was had a girl coming over. I put something on Marketplace. I walked out to give her this rooster that I was selling and came back into my house, and there were three books lined up in between my two doors. And I just thought, what the hell? Nobody came to my house. Nobody was here. I was outside. Nobody came up to my my driveway. And so then I later text her. First, I asked my sister because the ribbon was on my mom's birthday, which was June 9th, which was like 3 or 4 days after I got these books. And I thought, well, this is really odd. My sister must have snuck these over here. She's like, yeah, no, Peg, that did not happen. I said, okay, well, today I'm sitting here and I'm like, oh, I guess God dropped me off them three books. The one is amazing. I read this book every day. It's a gospel motivational book. It's so cool. I don't know. I can't make it 2 hours with my higher power. And I do choose to call him God. I grew up as a Baptist when I was a little girl, and I wanted so desperately to believe back then. And today I feel him. I feel the presence of this higher power, and it's truly amazing. Well, with that, I shall pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was Peggy W. from Wisconsin. I'm ready to take a second lineup. Please
Nancy
press
G.
star 1 to
Maggie.
Come on. Thanks.
Nancy,
Mary Darlene Maggie.
H. Josephine S. from New Jersey. Mary
Darlene H.
Okay, this is who I have, okay? I have Nancy, Maggie, Josephine, Mary, and Darlene. If I didn't get your name, hopefully we can get you in another time. Nancy P. from Massachusetts, please come in and share with us.
Hi, good morning. Nancy P. recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts, currently on my way to Connecticut. I wasn't going to share because I thought, well, everybody, you know, they'll all have much, you know, like totally on point shares. And then I listened, excuse me, and I decided that I did have something to say. So, you know, I'm not an atheist. I am super agnostic, super duper. I'm not an atheist and I'm not a believer. And if agnostic means without knowledge, that's really all that it is. It doesn't say without faith or without spirituality. I don't care about faith. I don't care about God. I just care about feeling better and doing good things and being helpful and, you know, not hurting myself with food and being happy. That's what I care about. And, you know, when I was young, I was raised in not a strict household. I mean, I was raised in a respectful, I suppose, not especially observant, but respectful. You know, we did the appropriate worshiping. I went to religious school. I was acknowledged in my middle adolescence as, you know, the most religions have something like that, have a ceremony like that. So I did all that. And I didn't necessarily feel like a phony, but I never felt like as one with it. And I tried hard. I tried because, you know, I came into this program 55 years ago, and, you know, I knew that there was a problem, and, you know, my mother was in OA and was quite a presence in OA, quite a pioneer, and, you know, she was on board, and, you know, she never jammed it down my throat, but I started going to meetings when I was 11, and, you know, everybody else seemed to, you know, have no problem with it. And I didn't know that it was a problem or not a problem. I just knew that I couldn't ever, 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 ever put down the food for more than, at most, and rarely, a few months. And usually just a few hours even. And so then, you know, life went on, calamitous, you know, my own calamities. And I was at a point where my life was horrible. Like, it had been horrible before. And, you know, I came into this meeting, and, you know, this meeting is exactly what they say. It's a healthy meeting. And people don't, they're not talking about abstinence all the time. I mean, some people do, but, you know, the big dogs don't talk about abstinence. And so I got better. And, you know, I choked out my secret in a whisper, like, that I wasn't sure, finally, that I believed in God. And my sponsor blew it off and said, well, you haven't had a spiritual awakening. That was like a key turning, like a secret key, an ancient key that you put it in some, you know, thing and it opens up and there's, you know, your house turns from a dungeon into a spa. You know, it was like that.
That's and time, man.
What, yeah, I'll just wrap up and say, you know, what happened was the ease with which I gave up things that didn't work in favor of things that did, today I believe my life is entirely spiritual. And it's because of one thing and one thing only. Say it with me. Surrender, surrender, surrender. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Nancy P. from Massachusetts. We have 10 minutes left and 4 people. We have Maggie, Josephine, Mary, and Darlene. Maggie, please come in and share with us.
Yes. Oh, good morning. Thank you, Kathy, for your service. And, oh, I love the shares. I'm Maggie A. from Massachusetts. And I was thinking about how my concept of God has grown. Although even when I was a child, it was developing, however inadequate it was, because it seemed to be focused more on rules. But then as a teenager, I had a real spiritual experience of God's love on a retreat. And that's when my heart really opened. And I think I mistakenly thought, oh, I'm, you know, everything's going to be fine. But anyway, it's quite a journey. I am still, you know, on my search to deepen this relationship with God, which has everything to do with my recovery from sugar and food addiction. I realized how central it really is to have this this relationship. And as long, you know, I of course make mistakes, and I always will, I suppose, but as long as I'm sincerely seeking the truth, I used to more, I think I was more seeking happiness. That was my goal. And not that I don't do that in a way, I still do, but I'm really trying to seek truth. And that's what I feel this big book is all about. And a saying that I heard that I love, that kind of is an example of this, is, and many of you might have heard it, but it goes like this: happiness is like a butterfly. The more you chase it, the more it eludes you. But when you become still and turn your attention to the truth, it will come and sit on your shoulder. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Maggie A. from Massachusetts. Next up, we have Josephine, followed by Mary, and then Darlene. Josephine, please come in and share with us.
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Josephine S., as in serenity, from New Jersey. I'm calling the reason, what I wanted to share was how I made, what has helped me connect with my higher power. I, like some other people who shared, I didn't have a problem with the higher power. I just wasn't connected to my higher power, and I didn't really know how to. But one tool that has helped me is my journaling. And when I journal, my journal entry is Dear Higher Power, and I write a little gratitude. Thank you for, you know, all that I have. I write what's, you know, holding, what's keeping me up at night, you know, whatever my worries are. I surrender. I do like the third step prayer, so I actually write it out every day. So I'm committing every day to turning over my, you know, my turning over the day, each day, committing to my higher power's will and not my will. And then miracles have happened in this journaling process. I have written things down like, I don't like this person at work, right? This person would get under my skin, or I probably didn't like this person that I worked with because I probably saw things in her that I didn't like about myself, whatever. And like, so I wrote it down. I was like, I really have a hard time with this person. I don't really like this person. I just came right out and told them, I'm very frank and open with my higher power now and at the time, always. And so that day or the next day after I wrote that in my journal, 3 different people came up to me and was like, oh, you know, so-and-so has been so helpful. I mean, we weren't really, it was out of the blue. Nobody has ever complimented this person or ever came up to me or said anything. And in one day, 3 people, the third person, I said to my higher power, okay, enough, I get it. This person serves you with their gifts and talents. I mean, I've had many, many miracles come in, and I can, you know, trace the journal entry to the answer. I couldn't question it anymore. I knew that my higher power was with me. I knew that my higher power was connected to me, and that tool has helped me. So I'm suggesting that. And even if your first journal entry is, this crazy girl, Josephine S. from New Jersey, told me to write to you, dear higher power, my, this crazy girl, you know, from New Jersey, put that in and then, you know, sign off. Then the next day and the next day until, I would say, give it 2 weeks, twice a day. Maybe then you can go back down to one. Give it a shot. Nobody has to know. You can get rid of it. You can burn it up afterwards. But it's definitely been a life-changing, higher power connecting tool for me. With that, I pass. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you so much. That was Josephine S. from New Jersey. We have 5 minutes left for Mary and Darlene. Mary, please come in and share with us.
Hi, thank you for your service. My name is Mary A. I'm calling in from Portland, Maine. And thank you to all the shares and those who are doing service today. This paragraph was one of the paragraphs that led me to open up my mind enough to be willing to try these 12 steps, and particularly the line that says, perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. That was my experience. I remember it like it was yesterday, and I was 12 years old, and I remember kind of like a toddler stomping my feet. God didn't give me my way. And so I was like, okay, that's it. I'm on my own now. And it wasn't until many, many years later, working with a sponsor in this book and reading this paragraph, that she was able to, you know, having gotten to know me some, she was able to identify. I told her I was an atheist, and she said, you know, I don't think you're an atheist. She said, I think you just think that your God is a jerk. And I was like, oh my, yes, you're absolutely right. I do believe in a God. I just think that it's worthless. And she said, well, then just like Ebby said to Bill, why don't you choose your own conception of God? Take your God that you've had your from childhood to the used God lot and pick out a new one. And I said, I've believed that I'm atheist for so long. How do I do that? And she said, just look for the evidence of God as you would define evidence of God. And when you see it, give it a wink and a thank you. And just do that and see what happens. And sure enough, that was the flimsy reed that started my belief in God, which has now grown into the single most important relationship in my life, bar none. And I'm so grateful for that woman, for this program, for God, for leading me back to God and recognizing that I did not have to subscribe to somebody's book. I only have to subscribe to my understanding of love and beauty and benevolence in this universe. And that's enough to stand between me and the first compulsive bite. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mary A. from Maine. And last up, we have Darlene. Please come in and share with us, Darlene.
Hi, good morning. This is Darlene H. from Virginia. Thank you so much for your service. I'm recovered and grateful. It's funny, same as the last speaker, that particular line about we imagined that we had rejected the God idea entirely. I imagined that. I decided my God wasn't doing anything for me, that the expectations were way too high. I was never going to meet them. I never got anything in return. See how good I am, or no matter how hard I tried, you know, was never good enough. Screw it. I'm not doing this anymore. That, you know, I don't want to play this game anymore. But, however, I was always seeking a God of some type, whether it was God of food or God of other people. I mean, that's the beauty of We Agnostics. Is showing how the chapter We Agnostics is showing how I was always seeking, whether it was God of reason, you know, I was seeking something all the time, but relying on myself. Excuse me. And so today, in my recovery, I wish that I could say that all of that's been reversed and I am on the straight and narrow and God is everything. I mean, God is something. God is very important to me. However, it's changing that decades-long mindset of mine is my work in this recovery, is, you know, doing what I can to be dependent on that power, not dependent on myself. And I think that's why this is called recovery. It's not something for me that's happened overnight. I am the educational variety student. I need to learn through hardships and all kinds of trials and tribulations, but it does get stronger and it does get better. And I am so grateful to bear witness to my life and to see the evidence that in slow increments, change does come. And with that, I pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Darlene H. from Virginia, and I thank all those who shared the time. Thank you, everyone. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, June 17th, 2026, is 23,556. That is 23556. We're now going to close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Maura Z., please come in and read for us.
Thank you, Kathy. Maura Z., gratefully recovered, compulsive overeater in Virginia. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.